Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business with Justin Van Fulpen and Neil Stratton as we talk about the business aspect of the game of football. And as always, Neil's here with me this morning. And Neil, how's it going?
Going great, Justin. So far, so good on this summer. I'll kind of get close to the at least the third of the way point, I guess, through the summer, and about I don't know, less than 30 days away from players reporting to camps. So it's a good time, and a good time to kind of refresh and recharge, but definitely haven't forgotten about the game, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, basically, you know, guys are going to report probably the 25th, 26th, 27th, depending on what club they're of, you know, this month. So a lot of guys are getting breaks done. I was actually over at an NFL guys camp yesterday, youth football camp there. We'll look forward to guys, you know, getting back and playing football. And that's, you know, kind of here is me and you kind of love it and are itching to see kind of how everything shakes out with, you know, the NFL and then college starting right behind it there. So definitely a lot of stuff going on there. So today we wanted to kind of talk about, the new series, All or Nothing, was released a little bit last night on Amazon Prime, where an NFL film crew followed the Arizona Cardinals around, you know, the whole season. It was kind of, nobody really kind of knew about it. I had heard about it, you know, a month ago, and I wasn't that super excited. I kind of didn't know, you know, I was like, what are they doing? This Amazon Prime, I don't have Amazon Prime, you were able to download something last night, an app, and then you could kind of watch all the episodes. So unfortunately I got sucked in and watched three episodes and didn't get to bed early enough there, but you know, it's a great show. It is kind of, you know, Hard Knocks-ish, and listening to Michael Bidwell, the president there of the Arizona Cardinals, they kind of wanted to encapsulate this season. They started it out, you know, wanted to doing stuff with the drafts, brought cameras in for the draft, and they just kind of evolved. Then they turned it kind of over to, you know, then they brought NFL Films in, and actually NFL Films went and found the partner, you know, as far as Amazon there. And that's something that this, you know, the last, you know, 2 days ago on, you know, Pro Football Talk Live, you know, he, you know, Michael Bidwell thinks that's the next kind of wave is the online video distribution like Amazon, Netflix, YouTube, some way, you know, will outbid the TV companies. You know, he's saying, hey, digital and, you know, different things like that. Now, looking at the NFL contracts with, you know, Fox and CBS right now, it runs to 2022, you know, for their contract there. But, you know, in regards to, hey, this program and, you know, the future of the how, you know, fans consume it, where do you think that's going, Neil? And do we think we'll get a standpoint where, you know, we will have some of these streaming, you know, outbid the networks for the rights to broadcast the games?
Well, I think, boy, there's a whole lot to talk about there. I think I would start with this show and what the Cardinals are trying to do here. The big networks have the rights to what happens on the, you know, between the lines on Sundays for 17 weeks. Then, you know, then of course the playoffs are a separate entity and what have you. And so that's, I guess, what's always been seen as the quote unquote product when it comes to the NFL. But teams like the Cardinals are looking for other ways, other things to sell. And this is a prime thing to sell. And, you know, you and I, Justin, we're not maybe as exciting as I don't have nearly as exciting a brand as the NFL does, but almost anything that the NFL puts its brand on wins in the public square in broadcast and what have you. And so by the virtue of the fact that the Cardinals are an NFL team and they can do this, I think it's going to be a winner. I think it sounds like a fascinating concept. Now, I will admit that I've never seen one episode of Hard Knocks, but everyone that I've ever spoken to says it's outstanding, very innovative, very informative, all those kinds of things. I'm not a big reality TV person, and so that's kind of been my, I guess I've never been able to cross that barrier to get to watching Hard Knocks. I probably should, you know, do that. But anyway, I think it's interesting, obviously, that the trend right now is drive everything to the handheld devices. I guess my question is, how many people are the junkie types that will watch this kind of stuff on a handheld and just sit there and, you know, and have that versus the ones that are, I guess, maybe your more traditional viewer who's going to sit there on a Sunday and watch from 1 p.m. Eastern until the last Sunday night. So, I mean, but there's very little to lose for a team like the Cardinals that are outside a major media market and looking to, again, open up another revenue stream. I think it's a fascinating idea. As far as the other networks, I mean, I don't know that at some point Fox, ABC, NBC, CBS may not try to tie down these shows as well. I think, you know, what we have is we don't have the next CBA until 2020, and so I think that it will be interesting to see how the NFL tries to tie down all this money, especially if, let's say, the New Orleans Saints or the Seattle Seahawks or the Jacksonville Jaguars decide, hey, we're going to do a show akin to what the Cardinals are doing now. You know, if the league starts to see this as a major money mover, then they may try to include it in the money that gets, you know, handed out between teams. And I may be wrong. I mean, that may not even be something to be collectively bargained. I'm not really sure. I know that there have been disputes by the small market teams with the big market teams on these kinds of things in the past. And as this model is kind of tested out and we see whether it's successful or not, then obviously you could see the Giants, the Bears, the Rams, the teams are in the major media markets, move to this and probably clobber everyone else and begin to find sponsors and all those kind of things. But I give the Cardinals a lot of credit. I know that this is probably not something that maybe Bruce Arians, Carson Palmer, a lot of the players, Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson, are as excited about, because it's one more time that they've got cameras pointed in their faces and maybe they feel like their privacy is intruded upon a bit. But from the standpoint of the people that are making the money at the top of the structure, it's an exciting thing. So, I mean, I root for it. I'm excited about looking to see how it goes. And who knows, maybe this brings in enough revenue to where they actually get around to starting up that developmental league that everyone's always been talking about for so many years. So it's an interesting possibility. I mean, it's one more interesting possibility and one more thing that for junkies like you and me to watch to kind of give us a little bit more insight on what goes on inside a team, inside the locker room, inside the draft room. And that's always good if you're a serious NFL fan.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've watched all the Hard Knocks and is a big fan of that. One thing I found this, you know, and like I said, I binge watched 3 episodes till 3 o'clock this morning. So I might be a little sluggish here. So, one thing I found interesting is that they had in the war room, and they had Amir Abdullah on the phone. They picked right after the Detroit Lions picked. So they've got Amir Abdullah on the phone saying, hey, we're going to pick you. We're going to, you know, hey, you know, here, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Abdullah says, oh, hey, I've got the Lions, you know, calling on. So the guy, you know, who, you know, the guy says, hey, you got the Lions picked on there, and, you know, Steve Kahn, you know, has an expletive, you know, and, you know, now they've got, you know, and this is in the second round, and now they're like, oh, what are we going to do, you know, there? And then, you know, you see Chris Spielman come up to the podium there last year and says, you know, with the 54th pick, you know, the Detroit Lions select, you know, Amir Abdullah. You know, so now they're like, oh, you know, so now you really kind of see, you know, one thing I always thought, you know, in regards to, hey, when the NFL Network or ESPN says, oh, we've got cameras in the war room. Yeah, that's great. But you didn't really, like, there you saw, hey, the agony, you know, of, you know, even, you know, people that maybe, you know, play fantasy football and stuff like that, when they do their draft and one guy says, oh, I take, you know, Tom Brady, you know, and you're like, oh, you know, next pick. And you're like, oh, what am I going to do now? And this is real life, you know, like, you know, jobs are on the line on who you're going to draft. So, you know, people, you know, kind of, you know, oh, it's all figured out and stuff like that. And you really saw kind of an insight there. You know, obviously, you know, you and me know how that all, you know, works. We've been, you know, been around the industry long enough. but maybe the casual fan, you know, sees it and now feels like they have some, like, you know, insight and that, you know, or, you know, the guy who, you know, kind of was a borderline, you know, guy, and now he sees this and he's like, oh, this is awesome, you know, like, so I think that was that, you know, in regards to, you know, not just the training camp stuff, but the year long, you know, them bringing in Chris Johnson, you know, them bringing in Dwight Freeney late, you know, in regards to, hey, this guy was just on a couch yesterday, and, you know, because of the injury, they brought somebody in there. They showed, hey, a practice squad guy, the English, you know, discus thrower who they had signed was on the practice squad. He's, you know, parked into Bruce Arians, you know, parking lot after Bruce Arians had said, you know, multiple times to the guys, you know, don't do this. You know, parks in his parking lot, and they cut him. They, you know, they're like, oh, we told you not to park. That's why he gets cut from the practice squad. You know, like,
wow, that's interesting.
You know, so I think that's the, you know, that's the stuff that I think, you know, they were able to do. It's an eight part series, and, you know, again, I haven't seen any in regards to, hey, what, you know, Amazon, you know, paid for this, and how the money had being distributed between NFL Films and, you know, and you know, the Arizona Cardinals. But I think that, you know, that's the interesting part is, hey, how does all this work on a business standpoint there? Because, like you said, there is money to be made, and, you know, and how does this all, you know, get there in regards to revenue, and then how does that, those pieces of, you know, the pie get there? My thing is that I think, you know, the last thing in the television, hey, big money, where brands like the Procter & Gamble, the Frito-Lay, the Pepsis can get the big dollars is the, you know, live-action sports, because everybody else in regards to anything else is DVRing it, you know, and watching it when they want to, or watching it on demand. The big money, you know, is sports. I don't see CBS, the major networks, allowing the NFL, whatever they got to pay. They've got to overpay, you know, for sports.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, the last deal between, like I said, Fox and CBS, you know, it was a record $27 billion deal. I just don't know how deep an Amazon, you know, those they want to go in regards to pulling, you know, pulling this and trying to wrestle the 500-pound gorilla that is, you know, the major networks, you know, therefore that, you know, brand of, you know, live-action games. Now, hey, they did have it, you know, Yahoo had done a kind of a secondary streaming of the game over in London between the Jets and the Bills last year. I know they're going to do some live stream on Twitter, you know, so, but again, it's not the only way you can watch that, you know, that game. It's okay. It's another way of viewing that in regards to, you know, trying to get these different platforms there. I don't ever see, you know, here in the next, you know, 10 years where you're going to see, oh, to watch your New Orleans Saints versus Detroit Lions, you know, you got to go to Amazon Prime to watch that game, you know, on Sunday at 1 o'clock. And that's the only way you can watch that game there. So that I mean, hey, I'm sure they've got to try to find as many, you know, additional revenue streams to make it there. I just don't know if I totally buy into what Michael Bidwell has said, you know, had came out to said, he's a lot smarter than I am. But that's just my guess, you know, from the little knowledge that I have of the industry in regards to TV contracts and stuff like that.
Well, ultimately, it is one more way that NFL teams can market themselves, and it's one more product. I kind of hate that word, but it's one more product that they can offer. You know, I remember, I'm old enough, Justin, to remember when ESPN had tractor pulls and Australian rules football, and they took a chance, and I think they picked up maybe a Sunday night game or a Thursday night game or something along those lines, and then I believe they signed the major league deal following that, and you know, that kind of gave them that kind of clout and legitimacy that they didn't have. I mean, all they really had was SportsCenter at the time, and now look where ESPN is. As the Amazons and the Netflixes and the YouTubes look to build on legitimacy that they already have and try to open it up into the sports theater, which I think has as strong a brand as any in American culture and in society, then I think they're going to be looking for these opportunities, which may be good for people like you and me that have access to these corridors and maybe a little bit of the inside information that they need to do this. I mean, I think I was pretty excited about The Agent, the show that was on 2 years ago, I guess, and really kind of gave insights into the business. But because The Agent didn't have the NFL stamp on it, and because they ran it improbably head-to-head with Hard Knocks on Tuesday nights, it didn't get the traction that I think everyone was seeking. But because you've got the legitimacy of these players and these head coaches and what have you, I think it's something that I think teams will really – I'm sorry, I think fans will really take an interest in. One other added note that kind of goes with what you mentioned earlier, you talked about how the Cardinals thought they were going to get Abdullah, and maybe he would have worked out great in Arizona. We don't know necessarily. But they waited a pick later, and they took a David Johnson, who scores 13 touchdowns in his rookie year. I think that one of the goals of Inside the League and Succeed in Football and this podcast and everything we do is to show that I think so many times it's fun to look at teams and say, well, hey, they picked this guy, they should have picked that guy. Well, the Cardinals wanted Amir Abdullah. They wound up with David Johnson. I don't think right now they would ever go back and say, you know what, we'll trade you David Johnson for Amir Abdullah. It's funny how things work out in the league. It's not an exact science. Scouts don't know everything. GMs don't know everything. That's proven day after day. And some of the people that wind up being considered geniuses, they got a little help with fortune, you know. And I think that's one of the points, again, that we try to make, that these people are not necessarily geniuses. Sometimes they have to have a little bit of luck and have to have things break their way. And I don't know, to me that's one of the interesting human elements of this game that make it so riveting, so gripping, and so interesting.
Yeah, and full disclosure on that Agent show, everybody, why Neil liked that so much is because one show, one episode, he was a starring guy where him and Ed Wasilewski were talking about guys' butts. But that's for another show and stuff like that. You know, so that guy's got a good rear, I don't know, you know, but hey, you know, there. So, you know, moving on to other pressing business, and that's Andrew Luck's new contract, and good Lord, did he get a huge deal. 5 years, looking, you know, to be, you know, 6 years, $140 million contract there, you know, was added on to his current year here. It looks like a total guarantee about $87 million with a signing bonus of $32 million. $18 million would pay in the next 10 days, and the remaining $14 million will be paid on March 31st, 2017. And that's one thing people, I think sometimes when they talk about signing bonus, they all get it in one thing. This is where the Indianapolis Colts, you know, and they'll do it for cash flow reasons. They took $18 million and paid it, you know, right up there, and then they waited for another, you know, almost a year to pay that additional $14 million. This 2016, his $12 million is fully guaranteed, has got some roster bonuses that are in there, you know, and different things like that. And when you get down to the end of the, you know, the last couple of years of the, you know, contract, his base stuff is not guaranteed. It looks like, 2019, 2020, 2021, they're all his, you know, all his base is not, you know, guaranteed there. So when we talk about, hey, that record number deal, what we're really looking at is in regards to that guaranteed money there, and that's, you know, that signing bonus stuff where, hey, you know, Lux, you know, we all knew he was going to get a big deal, you know, and it's probably bigger than a lot of people, you know, thought in regards to, you know, kind of when we talk about new money, it was $122.97 million in new money there, but, you know, not in regards to guaranteed, you know, new money there. So what was your take on, you know, Andrew Lux, you know, new deal that he just signed a couple of days ago?
Well, I guess I've been accused of being contrarian pretty much all my life, and I guess this is along those lines. But I was a little surprised that he didn't get the $25 million average per year that we had discussed last week, I think, or maybe the previous week. I really thought that would be an easy barrier for him to cross. He didn't get that. He also didn't set the record, as my understanding, for total guaranteed money up front. I think Ndamukong Suh remains the leader in that. I think he bests him for over $10 million in pure upfront signing bonus money. So in those two regards, and I think those are kind of the two legs of the table, so to speak, when it comes to measuring most contracts, I think it was a little – I mean, it's ridiculous to say a contract this size is under market, but I don't think that necessarily they reached the levels that others might have expected. And for a company like Wasserman Media, which was really in the spotlight, and this was really the first and really only big deal that they've ever done that wasn't a true paint-by-numbers rookie deal, maybe there were a couple bars they didn't quite cross that they thought they might, and that I think others might have expected. And I might add, if they try to use this deal to recruit going forward, they're going to have to answer a few questions about those two facets of the deal, because other agents are going to be planting that seed in the heads of everyone they recruit. Washington Media has not shown to be kind of akin to Roc Nation, another company that came in with a lot of money at the same time as them, in the regard that Roc Nation has aggressively targeted veterans and has tried to sign players that are going after their second deal. That's not what Washington has done. They've stayed more on the rookie side and really haven't really aggressively pursued the rookies either. But for that matter, maybe they will now. Maybe they'll expand that now if they kind of have a headline-making deal. But I don't think it was a grand slam for them, to borrow a baseball reference, and when it comes to negotiating, when it comes to everything they got, it was certainly a good one. And I don't mean to pick it apart, but there are a couple baselines that I think everyone looks at for contracts, and I don't think maybe they measured up to what they could have there. Again, not trying to put too fine a point on it, but I think it's not necessarily all good news for Luck and for Washington Media, his agency.
Yeah, and, I think we can all Monday morning quarterback those negotiations. The one
sure.
thing we don't know, to be, go contrary to kind of some of the points you had there, we don't know in regards to Luck what he wanted to do there. Because, again, could he have played out this basically his fifth year, extension and kind of played it out there and always been kind of, hey, to squeeze out another probably, $10 million over the life of the deal and some more guaranteed money to be able to do that? Yeah. But did he just want to say, hey, let's get it done, not that this is super team friendly, but hey, let's get it done and so I can kind of put it all behind me and,
right.
do that there. That's
right.
The only thing we could do that. Now, again, I agree to your points there in regards to this was Wasserman Media Group's kind of, marquee guy, and hey, it's a great marquee guy to have. The problem is, like you said, the CAAs of the world, are going to go in there and say, hey, we've had all these quarterback big contracts, the Mannings, et cetera there. How does that, compare, there? So I think, you said CAA and these other big time firms can come in there and nitpick it in regards to kind of going forward and recruiting kind of that next wave of quote-unquote franchise quarterbacks there. So one thing, I want to ask you a quick question, move on here. Wasserman Media Group, why haven't they been a bigger player with the Andrew Luck and stuff like that? Are they not recruiting? I mean, I don't, stuff I follow you, I don't see them, in the rep rumbling, I don't hear them,
right.
on the street and recruiting. What's the deal?
Well, I think Wasserman Media, quite frankly, hasn't committed in a full way to the NFL game yet, and maybe that's because they're still kind of trying to figure it out. I think everyone knows Will Wilson, Andrew Luck's agent, is his uncle, and so they kind of had an inside track there on a truly marquee player, and it's not as easy to recruit when you don't have blood ties there. They've hired a young agent, and he's a good guy, Richard Irvin. And he tries hard, and he works hard. But they mostly have adhered to mainly kind of fringe-type players from Stanford that were buddies with Lutz. And they haven't aggressively gone after that. Now, I have spoken to three agents from major agencies that have dance with Wasserman and have interviewed with them and had discussed the idea of coming over, but ultimately Wasserman didn't want to close the deal. And I don't
close
the
deal in regards to the money?
They didn't want I think they didn't want to pay market value, or at least what these agents felt was market value to bring something in. Now, valuation of an agent is one of the hardest things out there, and I've worked with agencies. I've worked on consulting jobs with agencies that are try to pull in. They want to put together a sports division, but they can't even really figure out how to pay their agents because there's so much money going out on the training fees and the marketing guarantees and what have you. And the way the SRA is written, the money goes to the agent on the SRA rather than an agency, or at least, you know, again, I'm not an attorney, but it's a rather complicated deal. It's kind of made for the solo captain of his own ship to go out there and sign players. It's not necessarily written for the big agency. Now, I know that certain agencies do break it up. Priority is one of them. So it can be done. But anyway, it's a difficult thing. And I think because they haven't been able to necessarily crack the code as far as how we bring in a big agent who can recruit and who will recruit and has the network we're looking for, they just haven't found the right fit. And because of that, they're still kind of going off of Wilson and Luck, and that hasn't been a big expansion for them yet. Also have to recognize, I think, I always say, after 40, most agents don't want to do the nitty-gritty of recruiting. They don't want to do the hand-holding. They don't want to do the dealing with the parents. And if you checked out my blog piece from yesterday, dealing with the parents is certainly no picnic. They don't want to do all the ugliness, the two in the morning phone calls, the, hey, what do I get, questions from, not just from the kid necessarily, but from the people around him, the hangers-on, what have you. All the ugliness, the not fun stuff of the business, of this business, is not really for the older guy. When I say older, hey, I'm 47, so I'm not calling 40 people over 40 old per se. But Will Wilson fits in that category. He's not a young man. He's not, when I say young, he's not in his 20s. He's not that kind of guy. Now, Richard is, but you've really got to get in and wade into the recruiting if you want to get big in this business, and I think that's just not something they've done yet. So we'll see if that changes now that they've got a big contract on their resume, so to speak, but so far that hasn't been the case.
Yeah, and just to follow up with your thing, when you sign an SRA with a player, you sign it, meaning Justin Van Fulpen signs it with Joe Jones, not ABC agency signs it with Joe Jones there. So
that's
I think, when the convoluting, comes there. So, one more topic we wanted to hit, and we've got, 120 seconds here left to go, Neil. So in 60 seconds or less, regards to the new CBA, there's fewer practices in regards to, pads, they're hurting the rookies and bubble players. How is that something that, we think will be addressed in the new CBA, or do you think that it's here to stay?
Well, that was really the only victory that the NFLPA was able to manage for players. And as always, the NFLPA is looking to cater to its veterans, not to its players that are trying to break into the league. So it's just one more thing in my mind. The two big things you hear about among coaches, scouts, whatever, is the offensive line play is down because of so many spread offenses in college, and the amount of tackling is down because there's so little amount of actual padded practices these days. Those two factors work against the player who's trying to break in and be developmental. When you don't have that pad time, the actual competition, it's harder to develop this game. You can't develop a football player in the weight room. You can make them stronger. You can give them tools. But to develop those tools and really make them the kind of player they need to be, they got to get out on the field. We're still a few ways off, several years off from the next CBA, but it'll be interesting to see if the NFL Players Association is willing to give on that some, maybe in an effort to win somewhere else, because if they are willing to give, to me, it'll be a net victory for the players. It may not look like it, but it will.
Yep. So, great. That was a lot more than 60 seconds, but hey, it's all good, Neil. So, hey, it was another great show, there. And, I think that's some great topics we'll have there. And as always, another week, people check out, succeedinfootball.com inside, the league. And we'll see you next week, Neil.
Thanks, Justin. See you next week.